joyful manifestation is being broadcast live on iHeart, iTunes, and many, many other stations.
Hi, this is Sugandhi Iyer for the Joyful Manifestation Show. Welcome back. This is a high vibration show, but we do endeavor to bring you really good information. And today we have Daryl Berry, Daryl E. Berry, founder of Next Density Center. He has a longtime interest in out-of-body experiences and has courses on these topics. He is the author of Travel Far, a really, really interesting book. And I'm sure it's traveling in different ways, not just the regular travel that we know about. And it contains several of his out-of-body experience journals, including extraterrestrial encounters. He is also a student of A Course in Miracles, and we've all heard about A Course in Miracles. But from my angle, I look at him more as a teacher because he gives classes in this and study groups. So I see him as a teacher more than a student. He's also a student of astronomy and physics and has started to give his first science talks on dark matter and dark energy. He is someone that I would say has spent time developing himself and becoming a source of valuable information for this world. You know, a lot of people don't have the ability to gather information, analyze it, and give other people what they've learned, at least some insight into what they've learned, but they have this fantastic ability to be able to do this on behalf of others. And Daryl, are you here?
I am.
Yes, thank you so much for joining us. I mean, it's even amazing to think of all of the things that you're doing. And I understand that your main interests are out-of-body experiences, A Course in Miracles, astronomy and physics. Am I even, you know, right?
That's correct.
To a certain extent?
Oh, yeah. Those are definitely my main interests.
So, A Course in Miracles, we've all heard about this. We've all heard about this. But for many of us, these are just four words, A Course in Miracles. But the people who have actually dived into this topic, into the subject, obviously have a better handle of it. And is there anything that you can share with us about A Course in Miracles and your viewpoint of how it helps people?
Certainly. So one of the things you might be surprised to learn is that even many people who've been studying the course for a while still are not clear about what it's actually about, because it's a very simple but actually very profound teaching. So when you get into, like you said, it's just four words, A Course in Miracles, and the foundation of it is the miracle. So the course uses a lot of words much differently than we might use in everyday language. So when it says the miracle, it doesn't mean like turning water into wine or something like that. It doesn't mean like flying or any kind of psychic powers or anything. What it's talking about is a change in our thinking. So from the course's perspective, looking at it from the very foundational perspective, basically we have two different modes of looking at the world, one from a perspective of love and one from a perspective of fear. And the idea is that when we look at the world from a perspective of fear, that's all the pain that we experience in the world, whether it's anger, whether it's judgment, whether it's unhappiness, whether it's sadness, whether it's an experience of lack. And basically the change or the shift from looking at the world from the perspective of fear to looking at it from the perspective of love, that is the miracle. And the idea of the course is that when we learn to do this on a consistent basis, we develop ourselves spiritually. in the highest sense of the word. So basically, you become less angry, less fearful, be able to be more calm, able to address things in a more rational way. So simply because there's less fear that's driving you. So basically, the course points out the fact that, you know, there's things that happen in the world that upset us in various ways, but the internal event, how we feel about it, is always because of a choice that we're making at the level of our own mind. And that's something that we could always change, no matter what's going on at the level of the world. So the ultimate progression from applying the course is experiencing a perfect peace that's changed, that doesn't change no matter what happens, and you're able to address everything in the world from a very peaceful state.
So, Gerald, and is it okay for me to call you that?
Certainly.
Okay, sure. You know, it takes ages for somebody to actually arrive at the place where they rise beyond situations. But would you say that there is a, for some new person who's joining this course, A Course in Miracles, and starts to be a student of it, does this person start to see immediate changes, even in his reality, his perspective, of course, but can someone say that they start to immediately benefit, or does it take some time?
I would say there's an immediate benefit from interacting with people, from teaching new people. There is an immediate benefit. Because I would say just from looking at things from a less judgmental place, you just feel better. You know, the course basically tells us, as a paraphrase, we have no idea how much deep peace and release we'll feel just from meeting people without judgment. You know, so just by an initial consideration of perhaps I don't have to judge people to the extent that I do. Just that cessation of judgment itself is a big improvement. Now, that's not to say that, you know, in a year of studying the course you will be enlightened. Generally, it'll still take lifetimes, and I'm nowhere near, I'm sure, being enlightened. I mean, I know I've made progress, and I would say that the most immediate progress that a person will experience is simply that. You know, let's say there's a person or there's an event that upsets you, that normally upsets you, that routinely upsets you. As let's say, as a relative, as a common example, there's a relative you have a history with. You regularly see this person at family events and so on and so forth. Every time you see the person, you're constantly thinking about whatever it was that happened in the past, something that can't be changed. But you can learn to forgive that person, and maybe it doesn't change what happened in the past. Maybe you two won't become the best of friends or anything, but simply not judging that person would allow you to experience more peace, and that peace itself is a great benefit.
Daryl, would you say that this is religious or just spiritual, and anybody from any religion can study A Course in Miracles?
That's a very interesting question. It's definitely not a religion. It's a self-study course. You don't really even need a teacher to study it. You could just pick it up and study it yourself. Of course, the difficulty is, as I was saying earlier, it is a challenging course to understand intellectually, even though the foundational principles are pretty simple. So it definitely helps to have someone to help you along. I definitely have people that help me, like Kenneth Wapnick and Gary Renard. But if you have, let's say, a different religion, I can say you will definitely find things that contradict that. So, for instance, the common religion in the United States, the most prevalent one, is the Christian religion, and the idea is that God created the world. The course turns that upon his head and says, "Well, God, to use that term, what the course refers to as God, is something that's eternal, that's changeless, that's formless, that's shapeless." So if you have something that's formless, that's shapeless, that's eternal, there's nothing that could possibly come from the eternal that's not eternal. Therefore, the world can't come from God, because those things don't match. You know, if you have something that's temporal by nature, it can't possibly coexist with something that's eternal. So from the course's perspective, the world itself is illusory with respect to God, which is the only reality. And in a sense, what enlightenment is waking up to that reality. So, that's not to say that somebody has to give up their religion to study the course. The course doesn't make any demands of anybody. It's something that if you start to study the course and really understand it, you'll see that it doesn't really comport with any religion I'm aware of. The closest thing in practice that the masters that visit Gary Renard mentioned was Buddhism. Like the theory is definitely different, but you go into Buddhism, they talk about things like Maya, like the world being illusion, about the world being suffering, and the idea is to get beyond suffering. So there's a few points that touch upon it, but even the theology or the teachings of Buddhism is still not aligned with the course. So it's quite unique. And the more you understand it, the deeper you get into it, you see how unique it is.
And you do host ACIM, A Course in Miracles class and study group on Sundays at 2 p.m. and 8:30 p.m. And they can email you for details, of course. And this out-of-body experience, wow, a lot of people, including me, I have to admit, have heard about this. And maybe even had one or two, but we may not even recognize that we're having one. But to actually consciously get people to have out-of-body experiences and to teach them how to do this, and it seems you've got a fantastic success rate over here going on. And so what is it that you would like to say? Because it says here 50% who completed the basic course and 100% who completed the entire course had out-of-body experiences. And this is such a mystical topic. Can you tell us something about this? And when they have an out-of-body experience, do they rise above the body and are able to see it from an observation point, or do they travel? Anything you can say.
Certainly. Well, I would say that definitely rising out of the body is a common occurrence. One of my students, she experienced herself as a point in consciousness. One of the experiences that I had as a kid, I would routinely float out the body and just float at the ceiling. I thought everybody did it. I thought it was normal. But one period of time, I floated out and I was hovering there. And then I floated out of that body again as a point in consciousness. So I was basically looking at a non-physical body floating by the ceiling and my physical body on the bed. And that's how I realized, you could also exist as a point in consciousness. So one of my students, just off the top of my head, she had an experience where she was suddenly floating out as a point in consciousness and was able to see her body. That's just one of the experiences that come out the top of my head. But generally, for the first experiences, you don't really get far. It actually takes some practice to be able to get some distance. You'd be surprised. One of the common questions that people have is, "What if I get lost?" But it's actually a lot harder to get out than to get back. As far as the success rate, I really, because so let me back up a bit. One of the reasons why I learned how to be able to teach out of body so sufficiently is because I stopped and started so many times. So when I first started doing the out-of-body experience, it happened spontaneously, it happened naturally, which is one of the things that lends credence to me of its reality, because I had no idea that any such thing was possible. I was like 4 or 5 years old and I started, I got up one time, I left my body on the bed by mistake, and I didn't realize what was going on. I was just like, it took me a while to realize I was going out of body. And I spent a little bit of time exploring and things like that. And after a little while, what happened is I got involved in life, and I just stopped doing it for a while. But then I had the thought to try it again, and I couldn't. So I had to relearn how to do it. And oftentimes it was because I wanted to explore something, and I wanted to say, well, what if, I mean, how did I know it was real? I mean, maybe I should test it. So what I did was, and I'll give a bit more detail about this experience because it is a validating experience. In the course of being in the topic, I met other people that did it as well. And my friend Lewis, who's one of the, I would say he is the best, the most advanced out-of-body explorer I met personally or interacted with personally. What I did was I started practicing again, and I taught myself to do it again. And, in different times I apply different techniques. That's how I'm able to teach so many people, because I could observe what's going on with them and sort of apply, teach them a certain technique that fits their dynamic. But going back to that experience, what I did was I decided I would go out and I would visit Lewis. I wouldn't tell him what happened, and I said, well, let me do some things to make the experience unique. So one of the interesting things about the out-of-body experience is when you go out of body, you have usually your normal appearance. Usually you look like you look physically, but you could even change your appearance. You could change your physical appearance, your how you physically look, and you can change what you're wearing. So what I did was I decided to dress myself in a long robe, a long white robe, which I've never worn, so I figured that would be unique. And I also put a gold band around the robe. So before I went out of body, I intended that I would be dressed in a long white robe. I intended I would have a gold band around the center. That seemed odd enough. I also imagined a few other things. Like I said, I thought about a few words I would tell him that he would have to tell me, and things like that. And again, I didn't tell him anything. Now, he was a good friend. He's still a friend of mine. And at this period of time, we would talk pretty much every day. So it wasn't uncommon for us to talk. It wasn't like I was calling out the blue for some odd reason. So I went out of body. And I remember seeing him. I remember interacting with him. It was one of my more less clear experiences because I had just started up again. And my clarity wasn't 100%, but I was groggy. I knew I was there. I knew I was interacting with him. And I ended the experience. I wrote my journal, and that was that. So the next day, we got on the phone and just talked like normal, just talked about normal things. I didn't mention it at all. And out the blue, he said, Darryl, I saw you out of body last night. I said, oh, really? He said, tell me. I said, tell me about it. And he said, well, you was wearing this big, stupid white shirt with this gold line in the middle. And it seemed like you were drunk. And I was like, interesting. So he caught what I was wearing. He caught the band around the center. From my perspective, I was really groggy. And from his perspective, it seemed like I was drunk, because I wasn't very clear. I was like, okay, that seems like a confirmation. And I had other experiences with him as well. One of the research studies I made, it was with him and another out-of-body explorer. We practiced meeting each other. So, you can meet people and confirm it in various ways. And so by the time I got to teaching people, before I wrote Travel Far, I wanted to confirm that it's possible to teach people that, that other people can learn it. So that's how I started teaching people initially. I started doing research studies where I would, advertise, and either individuals or groups of people would come, and I would just teach them how to do it. So over the years of doing that, I got better and better at doing it. And then we get to the last research study, which you mentioned. So about 30 people showed interest, and about 18 people signed up and started. Now, one thing I learned is the reason why there's such a big drop off is because what I find is very few people, even the people who say they want to have an out experience, do, because it takes work and effort, which is like anything. Maybe not everybody could run as fast as Usain Bolt. I mean, he's very tall. There's some genetics going on there, but there's probably a lot more people than you that can play the violin, for instance, or be good at math if you study really well. It's something that not a lot of people are interested or want to put forth the effort that do so. So what ends up happening is a lot of people drop out. They realize it takes more than like 5 minutes a day or something, because it does take about, 1 to 2 hours of dedicated practice. For like my most dedicated students, the ones that did the whole program, it was an 11-week program. And they started having out-of-body experiences at around week 5 or 6. And the ones that completed the whole program had about 3 or 4 just doing the program. But again, those were people who were, applying the techniques I gave, who were practicing every day. And what I found was everybody who does apply themselves to the technique, that was, I would have to count up. I guess I don't really know how many people I taught over the years, but in that last research project I did, I took very good notes of who was there, who left when, who did what. And that's how I got that percentage of the 50% who did the basics, because there's some people who didn't even complete the whole program. They only went half of the way, and they had their first out-of-body experience, and that was enough. So, okay, well, I'm going to go do something else. And we're just curious. And the people that continued, they ended up having more and more. Now, as far as your question about the extent, none of them got farther than their room. And I put some of their journals on the website. If you go to darylleberryjr.com, DARRYOEDARRYGR.com and click the middle site for my personal site. And if you scroll through, you'll be able to see some of the journals or on the Next Density site. And, but either they folded up, walked a bit away from their body, things like that. But it got them started. And they continue practicing, they will be able to get farther along. To give you an example of how the process goes, like when I was a kid, like I said, I used to just, the very, very first time I had an out-of-body experience, what happened is I started feeling very heavy and lethargic. And I went to go lie down to try to feel better. And, I guess I lost consciousness for a while, fell asleep for a while, and suddenly I started feeling a whole lot better. So I got up to go tell my mom I was feeling better. And when I realized she couldn't see me, and I realized I could put my hand through stuff, and I saw, eventually I realized I was out of body. And for a long time, for perhaps months, all I would do was just float out and just hover at the ceiling. I would just float out and hover at the ceiling. And eventually I learned to go across the neighborhood. And now, I mean, I went as far as I went into outer space and went like light years away now, at this point. So, it takes a little while to build up skill, but it does take effort.
So, Daryl, when you go out of space or when you go into space, have you must have journaled that, and did you publish that too? And is there anything you can share about anything that you saw?
Basically a very pointed experience. So what happened is I was going through a period of time when I had I was I don't remember why, but I was feeling pretty de depressed, and I wanted to contact something higher, something greater. And this was a period of time when I was going out of body pretty frequently. I was like going out like every day or whatever, so it was pretty easy for me to get out at that time. So I just kneeled down and I put my hands to the back of my head by my hands. And I just intended to go to source. That's what I intended to do, to go to source. And I just popped out of body in a higher dimension, and I was hovering before this entity that seemed like a star, and it was just radiating light. And I was just hovering, looking at it, and suddenly when the light hit me, it turned out to be love, like unconditional love and acceptance, just waves of it just washing through me. And it was so powerful that my consciousness sort of diverted between the two places, and I was partially in body and partially out of body, and I was wiping my tears as I was floating there, and this love was washing through me. And then what I decided to do was I decided to find some advanced civilization, and I intended that, and that just shot me up into outer space, where just suddenly I was just flying, and I was able to see stars going by me like speed lights on the side of the road. Just stars were just zooming past me. So I would just zoom and zoom and zoom in, and suddenly I stopped hovering over this planet, and it just seemed like a planet in space that was just radiating love and joy. And it just seemed like I was just observing this planet that was populated by these beings that had this very, very positive radiation. And I just went there like about 3 days in a row. I just went and just hovered over and looked at this planet. I mean, the experience was pretty much the same each time, whizzing through space and getting there. Another time, this was during the period where I was doing a research study with Lewis and the other out-of-body explorer, and we decided to try to meet on the moon. We were just pick places to try to meet. And during that period, during that experience, nobody else got out of the body, but I did. And I experienced myself underground on the moon, in this cave or this cavern. And I saw this weird looking being in there that looks sort of like a gray alien, but his fingers would look like they were tubes on the end of his fingers. But I could have still been sort of partially in the non-physical. So, but I did experience myself at the moon, and I saw something there. So, but those are the most prominent out-of-body experience I've had through space. More starting to come to mind that are not in the book that I mentioned. Like I remember one, I was out of body somewhere. Like sometimes you just feel like you just find yourself out of body. It's ironic as an aside. The out-of-body experience is actually more common than you think, because more than once I've gone out or find myself out and I'll see people there And I'll have conversations with them. And sometimes what will happen is I'll be able to get back and I'll be able to tell them something about themselves that I would not have otherwise been able to know. It's just that without enough development and training, people, of course, you can't get out consciously. And the times when you spontaneously get out, you just don't have any awareness of it. Either you're like a drunkard, like I was that one time. You're not very clear. You know, sometimes you can see people that seem like they're interacting with stuff that's not there because they're in a dream, but they're actually walking out of body having a dream. And sometimes people could seem clear, but they don't. They just don't remember it. But in this one experience, I happened to be somewhere, and there was a bunch of people there, and then I realized while we were there, this craft came down, this extraterrestrial craft came down, and a few of us boarded it, and the beings took us out of space and flew us around the planets, and we're destroying these things. So it was a cool experience, but that's a few of the experiences I've had with going in and out of space.
Daryl, this is amazing. So let me get it right. Let me get it straight. You found a being in Moon, like in a cavern on Moon.
That's right. But again, it
What?
could be like an interesting thing about the out-of-body experiences. The physical world, at least for me, it's kind of difficult. So, for instance, here's an example. Like, one time I was practicing, on another period I was practicing, I got out of body. And so I walked. I think at that period of time, I would lay on the living room floor and get up. And what I did was I walked through the house to the patio door in the back. And I thought, okay, I'm going to walk through the door and I'm going to stay in the physical world. But I walked through the door and I ended up in the quasi-physical dimension. So it's very easy to slip into a sort of quasi-physical dimension. So what could have happened was I could have ended up physically on the moon, but you can say every point in space has a non-physical counterpart. It's almost like everything is on this sort of dimmer switch, where you can be very much in the physical, but then you can be slightly out of the physical to where you can see the physical environment, but you also are enmeshed in a non-physical environment that's interspersed with this environment. So let's say I could be in this room right here and just like a normal room, but there could be a being standing right next to me that I don't see until I get out of body. And the being could be in a room that when I shift a little bit more, I realize, okay, there's an entire non-physical room that's within the same quote space as this room, but it's at a different frequency. So that's not to say that an astronaut can go to the moon and dig into the moon and find a cavern, but it could be that if an astronaut went to the moon, got out of body, and shifted the moon engine slightly, and then went into the moon, they could find caverns and find beings that are slightly at a different frequency than what we're at. So that's my only experience going there. So I didn't, I have to go back and see what dimension is at, but I just thought it to be a cool experience. At the time, ironically, that wasn't even my focus. I was just trying to get there to meet Lewis and the other guy, but it just so happens that nobody else got there that time, and I just, that's what I happened to see while I was there.
And Daryl, the reason I'm asking you this is because, they're sending people to the moon. India recently landed on the moon, and people have landed on the moon before, and they don't see these beings, and they're taking so much effort and expenditure to travel there. But Daryl, you seem to know how to do this, and you're giving classes on this, and you're training people how to have out of body experiences. That's fantastic. So, is your study of astronomy and physics, does that help understanding all of this? What makes you go from a very spiritual journey that you're doing with A Course in Miracles, and out of body experiences, and then you get down to hard science? Like physics and astronomy, and what makes you go between both of these, or do you feel in a way they complement each other? Anything that made you go towards astronomy and physics?
Very good question. I'll answer that in two different ways. One is something that physics and math and astronomy have always been interests of mine, but there was one thing that was more important than anything for me to find out, and that was the meaning and purpose of life. So I mentioned how there were several things that were motivating me to have an out-of-body experience at various points in my life. And, then I thought, well, is this the key to the meaning of life? And I was reading about things about, evolving to different dimensions. So that's what motivated me to be very focused on it and progressing towards it. And what happened is, as I started to go through that journey, I found the Course in Miracles. And when I started to apply A Course in Miracles, I started to have more connections and greater experiences. And it puts everything into a broader perspective. And now all of my experience and understanding everything leads me to the conclusion that A Course in Miracles points to the highest purpose or meaning of life that at least we have available to us today as humans. So having answered that question for myself, that gave me the room or the space to focus on other things in the meantime. Because before that, my whole focus, the majority of my focus was on the meaning of life. And I just did, for a living, I just did whatever, I did. I ended up working at a bank for almost 20 years. That's just what I did to pay the bills while I was focusing on trying to discover the meaning of life. Having discovered that, I started to realize, you know what, I hate that job. And let me do something that I enjoy. And that's why I started to go back into math and physics. So what I ended up doing is teaching as a professor, physics and astronomy. And that's what I want to do for a living, just because if I have to do something for a living, that's what I would most enjoy doing other than like writing books and teaching. So if I can't do that full time, writing like say out-of-body books and teaching and stuff, then I would want to teach math and physics. So I'm progressing towards getting my PhD and doing that. Now, as far as where they complement, I do believe that at some point the two will merge, because given that the out-of-body experience is real and my experience here is real, that means that it is some aspect of the natural world, and physics is the study of the natural world in all its aspects. It just so happens that our technology now only barely, really, scratches the surface of the quantum level of the universe. We talked about subatomic particles. So I do believe that at some point in the future of humanity, we will develop a level of technology to where, we could perhaps read dreams like recording physical light, just like how people have given accounts of encounters where ETs were able to record their dreams and play it back. If that's true, or at least possible, I think we'll get there at that point. So at some point, I believe that our understanding of physics will interact or reach the understanding to where all of these different realms that we think of as paranormal and metaphysical is simply a different frequency range of the universe, and we'll incorporate it all into one uniform scientific understanding. I don't think we're anywhere there yet, but I'm hopeful.
So, Daryl, from what you said something very important during this last paragraph. What he said was physics is about what's real. But people don't know that what we consider as spiritual and metaphysical is actually part of this reality and is very, very real. Is that what you meant?
That's right. Well, I mean, in other words, I'm not saying that's what I mean, but I'm saying that is true, and for good reason, because as I start to learn more about physics, it even helps me to look with a more critical eye at paranormal things, because there's a lot of things that people accept that don't. So let me give an example. Years ago, there was a guy who I met. This was back. Way back in, I don't know, the 90s or something, when like chat groups were a big thing. Like now it's like different social media, but at the time it was all of these chat groups and news groups. And there was this one chat group that I would frequent, and people knew me and everything. And this new guy came who you could tell he wanted all the attention. And what he would do is he would convince people that he had all of these powers. Like he convinced people he could get out of body. He convinced people he can teleport and things like that. But it was clear to me he was just wanting attention, right? So it eventually got to a point to where Okay, so let me go ahead and test this guy. So one of the things you can do with the out-of-body experience is if you know how to do it, and somebody's claiming they're very advanced, like for instance, Lewis. I went out of body, I saw Lewis, who didn't tell him anything. And he's more advanced than me at it. He was able to tell me all the details. So I went out of body to see this guy. And he had no memory of it. He was like any normal person. I never had an out-of-body experience ever. So I called, taught him the next day, said, hey, I saw you out of body. You know, nope. This is what you were wearing. Oh, that's my favorite shirt. I was able to tell him details. Like I said, I was able to tell him what his favorite shirt looked like because he wears it all the time and things like that. And so that was interesting. And but well, people falling for this guy, and eventually I got him to admit it that he doesn't know how to do any of that stuff. He was just looking for attention. But there was a lot of people who believed him. So, you know, I don't fault science for not accepting that about experience, because the fact is, at least to my knowledge, we don't have the technology to validate it technologically. And you know, perhaps there's not many physicists who want to learn how to go out of body, because to them is, you know, initially, like I learned out of body first, so, and I've tested it already, so to me it's real. But maybe a physicist may not want to do it. So, but again, I don't fault them, because there's so many charlatans out there who muddy the water, and you have to be discerning. So what I think is going to happen is as we progress our technology, eventually we'll get to the point that we can technologically detect these things that we didn't detect before. Like for instance, there was a period of time when we thought atoms were these solid little balls, right? And then we looked at atoms like the solar systems, where there was a proton and a neutron in the middle and an electron rolling around it like a planet. But now we know that electrons are not necessarily particles. They behave like waves as well. You know, there's the double slit experiment where you can see that if you don't have a measuring device there to interfere with the electron, it'll go through both the slits and interfere with itself. So, you know, as we progress, you start to get more and more into a sort of intangible idea or understanding of nature. So I believe science will catch up. I think that what we can do as people who are aware of the metaphysical thing is to develop it to as a high degree of integrity as we possibly can. So that's why now I'm getting into another period of practicing, and I'm starting to teach people again so they can learn as well. And in this time, what I want to do is I want to start doing more, because you know, most of the things I did out of body, it was just sort of, I guess you could say, curiosity. You know, can you go out of body and see somebody? So wait, can you know, just to understand and learn. But what I want to do now is start to get even more in depth with it, and for instance, have a team of people who can very consistently meet. And perhaps that'll be, I mean, imagine if you had like five people who can very consistently pass messages to each other and demonstrate that. That could start bringing some eyes towards it, and maybe make some interest. So I think if we simply do our due diligence and develop the metaphysics, physical aspect to a high degree as we can, with as much integrity as we can, that'll do much towards to it. And again, also progressing science with all of its skepticism and disbelief, and until we can actually get enough technology to bridge that gap. And I think in the far future, we'll be looking at a very bright future indeed when those things do meet. Because imagine, have a technology that you can control with thought. I mean, we're already starting to edge there with physical technology. Like we know Elon Musk is doing the Neuralink thing, that's called, where people are starting to be able to, you know, move their mouths and different things with just thinking about it. Imagine a world where we don't even need an implant, where we could, where we have technology that's consciousness sensitive. Well, let's say you could just like how we can pair a mouse with our computer, we could have technology that can pair with our certain frequency, and we could just operate it on thought. I think we'll be there one day. If it's conceivable, it's possibly achievable. So I think one day we'll get there. So, you know, I don't think we should begrudge science for being skeptical. I think we should applaud it for making sure that the things that go into our everyday life is vetted and, you know.
But from what you're saying, it still seems as if the metaphysical people are still more advanced than sciences. I
I
mean,
wouldn't
science
say more
always tried.
advanced.
I'm sorry?
I wouldn't say more advanced because, okay, so coming at it from the closest perspective, right? From the closest perspective, everything is a projection of mind. Everything is a projection of mind. So being out of body is no more spiritual than being in body if your thinking is at peace, you know. So, and that's just because I can generate out of body experiences if I put my mind to it, doesn't in itself make me more spiritually advanced than another person. I may be more metaphysically advanced, just like how Usain Bolt, I mentioned him earlier, he's more physically advanced because he's trains running all the time. He could run so much faster than anybody. I spent, literally decades training out of body related stuff. So, of course I'm more developed in than most people and teaching people. So of course I'm more advanced at understanding it. But spiritual advancement is definitely something different. And to that point as well, we're able to talk right now. Not because of metaphysical development, because of technological development, with the computer and the camera. So it's pretty advanced stuff. So I think everything has its place. So
Right, but
I look at it that way.
to prove some of your metaphysical theories and happenings, science still has to catch up, is what you were saying.
Yes.
But coming to something else, you said you love to debate flat earth believers.
It's a,
Flat
it's
earth
a,
believers.
yeah, it's an amusing pastime.
Oh, it's an, but do you feel that the flat earth believers have something, I mean, any basis at all? And I'm not trying to defend them or talk for them, but from your point of view, do they have anything at all, any logic going for them at all?
Not at all, no.
Not at all.
Yeah, I think I first learned about flat earth. I don't remember the exact year. It was either 2015 or 2018, one of the two, most likely 2015, when a longtime friend of mine started to believe in it. And actually thought before that, I've heard of it before, but I thought people were, it must be, some kind of parody or something. I don't know. But I knew he wasn't putting me on. He really believed it. And that's when I first became aware that people actually believe the earth is flat. And this was way back before I even went back to school. So, I did have some college before I went back to college, but still, like I say, my firm understanding of math and science at that time was still like a high school level. And even then, looking through the videos, it was clear that it was just absolute nonsense. And since then, I started to, look at their videos. I did some debunk videos of it. I've debated some of them. So that included not only interacting with them directly, but, looking at the videos they post and things like that. And in every single case, ignorance is a major part of it. For instance, they make claims about things like this. Let's say they'll say, "Oh, science says this," but they have no references. They're just repeating something that somebody said on a flat Earth video, who's also repeating something that somebody else said on a flat Earth video. And you're trying to find the force, or the source of who said it, and they just made it up. They just make up things that sounds good to them. The math and science, they don't even have a middle school level of math. So for instance, going back to my friend, one of the things he told me was, "Well, we know the earth is flat because, he showed me a picture of some buildings across a body of water. I don't know, it was some distance away across a big lake or whatever." And he was like, "Well, if the earth was a globe, that building would be leaning. You can't see it leaning, so you know the earth is flat." Now, it didn't take me long. I might even did it right on the phone conversation. It's pretty easy to calculate how far a building should lean on a globe. So you have a globe that's about 24,000 miles circumference, and you divide it up by 360. That's about 69 miles per degree. So it takes about 69 miles of distance for a building to lean 1 degree away from you. And I took a protractor and looked at a degree, and you could barely see a degree. I mean, something could be literally in front of your face, and you could tilt it by a degree, and you wouldn't be. I mean, my finger, I mean, I'm trying to do a degree, but that's probably like 5 degrees or something. It's very small. But at the time, I asked him, I said, "Okay, how much would a building lean if it was a globe?" He didn't know. Do you know how to calculate how much a building would lean if it was a globe? He didn't know. He said he was very bad at math in school. He flunked out of math. He couldn't do it. So even if he can't do the math, he doesn't understand the math. He somehow knows that the building would be leaning too far away, far enough away for us to tell the difference. And this is one example of all the arguments that Flat Earth has. So no, there's no validity to the position whatsoever. And then, of course, when you get into the evidence for the globe, it's simply a landslide.
And Daryl, is there something that you personally would like to tell people? Because I see that you've graduated from Palo Alto College, and I've driven around Palo Alto a lot. But is there something that, from your point, you would like to tell people, something that you feel would help people understand this world better? I mean, you've said a lot that already helps, but something that is very dear to you, something that you feel you would like to personally share.
I guess two things that come to mind when you said that is two things I wrote about recently. I would say make sure that we keep in mind our freedoms and our liberties. Like there's a push by some people in America to have us to agree to give up our liberties as if being slaves will be, make us more free. Like giving up our right to bear arms or giving up our right to freedom of speech. So I would say make sure to, like, a quote to give a bad paraphrase. I think it was Thomas Jefferson said that he would rather the difficulties that come with too much liberty than too little of it. So for instance, people, I see a lot of these sort of advertisements about all of these talking about these mass shootings, but one thing is they don't mention is these places that have all these mass shootings are places where guns are banned. So I think the solution to such violence is to arm yourself, and criminals will either be too afraid to try things, or if they did, then they will be able to get dealt with very, very quickly in time. And then we'll find out that people committing crimes with any kind of weapon will go down. And I think that the people who are in government who want to ban that, we should get them out of office because even if they have good intentions, they cannot guarantee that the next administration or the next or the administration 100 years from now won't become tyrannous. And now they have a disarmed population, and then you have another Mao or another Pol Pot, and crazy things happen. So the other thing I would that comes to mind that's close to me is honesty and truth, because even in my experience in college already now, I've run into, when I took a studies class, into this gender ideology thing, or this critical race theory thing. And I would just say we have to stick to truth. And so that's one of the things I'm gonna start speaking more clearly on now, because even now starting to enter physics, like they're trying to push it, like pronouns and things like that. And I don't agree with that. I think that we should be honest and stick with the truth and the facts that, like, for instance, a man can't become a woman or a woman can't become a man. If somebody wants to believe that, that's fine. We shouldn't be trying to force people to believe that or trying to use laws or whatever, or bullying or whatever, to try to control what people say or control what people think. People are even getting their grades marked down in school because they said the word female or something like that. It's craziness. So that would be the second thing. We should continue to be honest and not let people's delusions or mistaken understandings influence society and just cause a lot of hardship, especially with, kids get these medical procedures and things like that, and they're not having good experiences in the end. So let's stick with the honesty and truth and not let people who are having some kind of psychological problem dictate the way that we run our society.
Daryl, so you feel basically that it's better to lean towards the side of too much freedom and, it's possible consequences rather than be so, take away people's liberty and then maybe use the word suffocate them so that they don't feel like expanding. And Daryl, of course, we are approaching the end of our show, and I'm just wondering, I wish we could have you back again here because there's so much more to learn from you, and you've done a lot of thinking on behalf of other people, and that is a lot of work that you're putting in, and your book, Travel Far. How do they get a hold of it? And how do they get a hold of you? How can they contact you? Any email address? Any place they can buy travel for?
Certainly. You can go straight to darrellebrerryjr.com. That's DarrellEBerryjr.com. That's the index from our different sites. You can click out of the one. You can click Next Density. That'll give you a list of the different books I've written. Right now, I have Travel Full Out on A Course in Miracles. I also have a book out on excuse me, a Travel Full and Out-of-Body Experience. I also have a book out on the Course in Miracles called Classes on the Course in Miracles. I also have recordings on the Next Density site of different classes I do now. You could also find my email address at the DarrellEBerryjr.com site if you want to contact me directly. If you'd like to join my A Course in Miracles study group, it's free. It's every Sunday at 2 and 8:30 p.m. And what I'll start doing is, in a central time, what I'll start doing as well is streaming the first class, one the first class of the month. I'll start streaming that online as well. But you could just go to that website. You have all the links to the videos, all the links to the books on which are sold on Amazon, and information on how to join the study group or how to sign up for the out-of-body experience class, of course, if you want to learn. For people who signed up for the course, what I learned to do from the studies, I first take people on a week by week basis. So if you want to be an out-of-body experience student, I'll train you for a week or two or three to see how you do it. And if after 2 or 3 weeks I find out, okay, you're not putting enough effort into to do it, I'll let you know. And if you're doing really well, then I'll start taking you on that as a month at a time, if you like. And but anybody who is a who wants to join the ACIM, because one of the things about a course is, you know, I expect people to be resistant to that because a lot of people don't want to give up judgment. It's pretty hard to give up judgment. We could all think about somebody in our life that we don't want to see as essentially innocent. So you know that takes a little bit of work. But still come along, you can learn, and I look forward to seeing
And they can do this long distance also far away from you. They don't have to be there, right? Or,
Oh,
I mean,
definitely.
correct me if.
It's all on Zoom. So the out of body experience course is on Zoom. What we do is we log on to Zoom once a week, teach techniques, answer questions, I clarify anything that's going on for the practice. Then I have a forum. So basically, I model the class after all the different research studies because over time I refined it. And I think my last research study was the best one. And I modeled the class after that. So we meet a week. We go over the techniques. And then through the week, you can post your journals on the forum, and I give you ongoing feedback and coaching throughout the week on the online forums on the website. So that's how the so it's all online. You don't have to be nearby. The Course in Miracles class or study group is online as well. They're both on Zoom. I have one link for the 2 o'clock session and another link for the 8:30 session. And whoever emails me, I just add your email to the invite, and you get sent the invite. What you have to do is just click the link to join the Zoom, and you're welcome to join in.
Oh, wow. This is fantastic. And, you know, we're at the end of our show. Daryl, I want to thank you and we want you back again. So anytime you have the time to talk to us, please come on. We have a lot of people who want to listen to you and want to work with you. This is Sugandhi Iyer signing off for the Joyful Manifestation Show. And we will meet again next week, 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time for the Good Fortune Show. Daryl, do you want to just say good night or anything?
Good night. It was a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me. And I would enjoy coming back. So I look forward to that in the future.
Thank you so much.
Joyful Manifestation Show is now broadcasting live on over 100 digital stations. These stations include 24 foreign stations in over 13 countries and social media websites, which include Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. You can hear us live on iTunes, Spreaker, LA Radio FM, SoundCloud, TuneIn Radio, AHA Radio, and more. And you can always catch the podcast for the Joyful Manifestation Show on iHeartRadio, among others. Joyful Manifestation Show is heard all over the world. We'll take you where you want to go.